guy.
Welcome back to Give Me Some Truth. Today we are discussing out of the 2024 market outlook, the back to the future outlook that we put together. We have Nate and myself, Clint, in the booth. And we're talking about Nate's piece, which is focused heavily on real estate, a near and dear subject to you since, you know, you sold real estate in college.
In college.
Kind of fun fact there.
For 4 years, yeah. I got my license. I got my real estate license the summer between graduating from high school and starting college, and then sold for the 4 years that I was in school.
So did you carry a pager?
I carried a pager and I carried a cell phone back in 95 through 99, which back then was like kind of a big deal. Like a big deal from the standpoint that nobody had cell phones. So it wasn't a big deal. It was unique because college students didn't have cell phones. It wasn't a thing, really.
So did you have like the Nokia with
Yep.
Yeah, the big antenna.
Flip down, like.
Oh, the flip down one.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I started, the first one that I ever had was the brick. Was like the old school, like, you know, Richard Gere, Pretty Woman, like cell phone.
So you never had the camera bag in there. You had the flip. So the flip was,
no.
And I remember the flip.
Yeah.
You flip it down, but there was actually no receiver in the flip. It just kind of like,
yes,
you open the phone up and it kind of made it work. And then, yeah. And then
my father had a bag phone. I remember that was the first thing I remember. I think was the bag phone.
So it was only very important people that were time sensitive. So realtors would definitely be one of them that would need the bag phone or the other phone, and then drug dealers. So that was pretty much.
Yeah. It. And that's funny that you bring up that Wall point Street because people. That was an interesting conversation that I had to have with my professors, especially when I was a freshman and sophomore. Because when I told them that I had a cell phone and a pager, I mean, obviously their first thought was like, so you're selling drugs out of my class?
And
I was
like, no, I'm a bookie.
That's not what we're doing. Exactly. I'm just taking sports bets. It's not a bigger deal. So yeah, that was basically how it went. So then when somebody called the office and wanted to see a house, then I would get a pager or I'd get a call and then I would step out of the office or step out of class. And that worked.
That's great. So, you know, we talk a little bit about new normal or old normal. What were the, when you were going and selling, now you weren't a mortgage loan officer at that time, you were a mortgage loan officer later, but at that time, do you remember what the rates were at that time when you were selling real estate?
I think that they were in the like 5 to 7% range, if I remember right. I think it was somewhere in that neighborhood. Yeah, sixes maybe, something like that, yeah. I think is what it was. High fives, low sixes maybe, something like that. Yeah.
And then when you were a mortgage loan officer in the beginning, when did you start selling mortgage loans?
2003.
Okay, and what were the rates then?
2004.
2003, 2004.
I think they were relatively similar. Yeah. I think they were maybe a little bit lower. They were maybe a little bit lower, if I remember right. Maybe more in the fives, I think, is kind of where five to low sixes, I think, is where they were back then.
Yeah.
But there was a period of time there where it was there was some relative stability within those markets where it was kind of range bound. And that's part of what I wrote about in the piece and included some charts in there. There was a period of time because I really tried to look at the last 50 years because I felt like the right block of time. It was like 73 to 2023. And there was a 18 year period, maybe even 20 year period in the middle that kind of encapsulated the 90s where the rates were relatively range bound, like 5 to 7, kind of right in there. It broke out a little bit, but it kind of stayed pretty stable during that period. So it was one of the, like, it wasn't like headline news because it just didn't move all that much, right? I mean, if it moved 0.5% one way or the other, that was kind of a big deal. Whereas now we're so used to it, like, moving all over the place.
Well, it was a little more traditional back then. You know, the 20% down payment was kind of a thing for a while, and then it started to become less and less, and then it was Wild West for a while.
And then it was Wild West. It was Wild West. That Wild West kind of started, maybe like late 90s, because I think when I was graduating college and then getting into lending, I first started at Wells Fargo, and yeah, it was a little Wild Westy back then. Like, you could do some interesting things back then with bridge loans and 100% financing, but the no income, like no verification, that stuff was more like kind of early 2000s, if I remember right, kind of 2000, 2005, maybe somewhere in that neighborhood. Yeah. And then it really got ugly. I mean, it's what made the bubble more or less, which, you know, created 08, 09. So, yeah, kind of that, like, 2005, 2006, 2007 is when it really started to kind of get ugly. Because when you watch the scenes from Big Short and Steve, what's his name? Who's the actor? Steve Carell. Thank you. Steve Carell's character is talking to the two mortgage officers at that bar, and he asks, like, why are they bragging, and or why are they admitting guilt? And his guys that were there with him were like, they're not, they're bragging. Like, that was, I remember those times. That was the height of it. I remember colleagues, not at where I worked, but like other people in the industry were like, yeah, it was wild west stuff.
Well, and then they packaged them, and what really caused 2008 was the securitization of all of those mortgage loans that are packaging them up using leverage and having that AAA rating on those,
yeah,
you know, bonds, saying, oh, these are basically infallible, and then pensions buying them and foreign governments buying them, and then all of a sudden you didn't have actual AAA rated securities inside of here. In fact, you had a bunch of mortgages that were, you know, totally belly up once they ended up, you know, the real estate market ended up kind of falling apart. So
yeah, because and you're exactly right. It was, and this is so many things in history that you can point to that where kind of tragedy, if you will, or ugliness comes out of the things with which we take for granted, right? So one of the things you take for granted is the stability of mortgages. I mean, it was bulletproof for, again, you know, I mean, maybe like post early 1980s, right, all the way up until that point. I mean, they were kind of bulletproof. And so when we started to bastardize that by packaging them and degrading the quality and doing all that while still having the assumption that it's bulletproof, it's, you know, no questions asked, stream of income, like when those two things run into each other in the same sentence, you get 08, 09. Because then all you need then is values to come down. Because the only thing that keeps the music going is values continuing to go up. Because as long as you can get at more equity, then you're okay. So what created the ugliness, the music, when the music stopped of valuations going up, because when that stopped, you couldn't refinance, you couldn't get more equity, and then people realized how overexposed they were.
And I think people were wondering that in 2023, would we see a significant pullback in the real estate values as interest rates continued to go up? Because
yes,
we kind of broke out now. We were in such a low interest rate environment for such a long time. So we were talking about all that, you know, post 08. Then all of a sudden we had the new normal, which was, you know, interest rates are now going to go down, and everyone got locked into their really, really low rate mortgages. And then the rates just exploded last year.
Yeah.
And the impact in the real estate market was significant, but we still saw prices hold the line pretty well.
Yeah. So it was an interesting, kind of juxtaposition of variables, and I wrote about this in the piece, that the idea of new normal, and you and I, we talk about this a lot, but the way I tried to kind of define it is post 08, 09 up until, you know, kind of 2022 really is kind of when they started to kind of go up. People wanted to call it the new normal, right? And I pushed back against that idea because that was as atypical or not new normal as was the period in the 70s and early 80s, right? So you can look at these periods of time and where things are pushed so far away from the mean that we then start to define that as normal. And we lose sight of historical precedents to say, well, hold on, if you take a wider view of it and you go back even further, and it's not the fault of the people that are having these conversations now, because most people weren't buying homes in the 70s today. Some people were, right? I mean, our parents and grandparents, but most people weren't. And so the younger people, I mean, if you're under the age of 50, what was happening in the 70s and early 80s, that doesn't like register with
you're
at all.
Used to
Why
low,
would it?
To right. Rates getting lower
exactly.
over time.
So just as weird as 15% mortgages were in the late 70s and early 80s is as weird as 3% 30-year fixed over, you know, 2010 to, you know, whatever, 2022, if you want to call it that. So it wasn't a new normal. It was a new period of atypical behaviors within those markets. The normal part was when you went before that, and you, as we said before, you know, the kind of 90s into the early 2000s, that was the more normal. And so when people tried to define this idea of new normal, it wasn't new normal. It was simply the beginning of a new atypical time, which then at some point was going to end, and that ended the, you know, these last year or two. And so we're kind of back to, as our theme in the market outlook, back to the future, right? We're kind of back to what is actually normal, which is rates in the 5-7% range.
Yeah, and I think going into 2024, obviously a lot of people are hoping that rates kind of soften up a little bit, and they may. They already have.
They already have. Yep, they're down a little bit. Yep.
But you know, to think that we're going to go back to sub-4 rates, or even there was a time where we were hitting like sub-3 rates. It was insane.
High twos, and
it's just so atypical. And so I think we are. I would agree with you, and you have more expertise on this period. But you know, it is a situation where we are going back to the old normal. We are going back to normal interest rate environments.
Absolutely. And that was the point I was going to make is essentially what happened is we put a bookend on the period of time that was not normal. Right. And so that's kind of what happened. So we can now almost look at it historically now and go, okay, from, again, however you want to draw the line, 2010 to 2022, right? That was an atypical period, just as strange as was the 70s and early 80s. And now we're kind of going back to what is more normal, which is rates in the 5s to 7s. They peaked out. They never touched 8. I don't believe anyways. I think they got to 7.75, somewhere in that neighborhood is where they peaked out. And then now they've fallen back down. And I think that you're probably going to see, you know, 5-7 range somewhere in there. Maybe we flirt with low fives, but I don't know that we break through that 5 barrier and get back into the 4s, because that would take a lot of work from the Fed of dropping rates, cutting rates. They would have to so aggressively cut rates to drive the 10-year down far enough, or there would have to be some sort of other thing that happens, right, that's just completely out of left field.
We'd have to have a massive recession.
Have to be a mass recession. You'd have to have some incredible geopolitical issues going. It would have to be something that happened, you know, that made that get to that point. I think otherwise we're kind of in that range of 5-7, I think is what we're looking at.
And we spoke, you know, when we looked into 2024, we spoke to a realtor yesterday, actually, as we were having lunch, and I think you made a great point. You know, he said you've got to get more inventory out there, and that will help prices. Right. So right now prices are holding the line or increasing. We're back to kind of a pretty favorable price environment. So if you're a seller, you're happy about that.
Yep.
If you're a buyer though, and there are a lot of buyers out there looking to, you know, change their situation, perhaps they want to get into, they've been in their starter home for a while or their second home, and they want to upgrade. And all of a sudden, the shock of the rates going from 3-7 changed their monthly payment significantly. I'm in a seller's market right now, and if I'm a seller, I'm feeling pretty good. If I'm a buyer, I'm going, I still don't have the inventory. And so you're hoping that some of these people are going to re-enter the market on the sell side to help prices out a little bit and to help inventory out a little bit. And with people locked into sub-4 mortgages in many cases, that might be a tough needle to thread, and it's going to take some time.
Yeah, that's the weird spot we're in, because if you would take a normal scenario and you would take rates from 3 to almost 8, right, that would crush most housing markets. The values would fall. You know, you would have supply would kind of explode from where it was to, you know, where it would end up. Maybe not, you know, incredible excess supply, but maybe we go from, you know, a lacking supply back to normal or something like that. You would have a correction that would happen, but we didn't have a correction. And the reason why we didn't have a correction is because you're exactly right. It's a supply problem, an inventory problem. In a typical year within the real estate market, you're going to have people that are going to sell their existing home, whether it be because they want to upgrade, they want to downsize, they want to move geographically. Maybe their job takes them from this state to that state. So you're going to have a normal turnover of homes that happen within a market. And if you go back and say, all right, over a 10-year period of time, right, you have rates that are range bound. Again, kind of go back to the 90s. So range bound from 5-7, right? Well, the rate environment then is not going to really motivate or demotivate people from that normal turnover of homes on a year-over-year basis. So somebody buys a home in you know, X year, and 8 years later, they're going to sell it. As long as rates kind of stayed roughly the same, they're not motivated or demotivated to make that decision. Or said another way, rates aren't really even almost factoring into that decision, right? They're going, oh, I need a bigger home. Let's go get a bigger home. Or, hey, we got to move or whatever it might be. Well, then you look at the falling of rates, right? When rates went kind of post 2008, 2009, and they were falling. So not only do you have the normal turnover, people going, I need to sell or I need to do something different. Now I get the bonus on top of that of I also get to leave my 5% mortgage and get a 3% mortgage, right? So in that scenario, you actually had motivation through the interest rate market to say, not only do we need to move because we need more space or we want to move or we want to downsize or whatever it is, but I get this bonus of getting this better mortgage. Look at how great this is, right? And so you actually had more sellers entering the market because they're going, I want to take advantage of this. Well, as we know, you know, cycles cycle. And so now that rates have started going up, the inverse has happened. You now actually have sellers going, I don't want to sell because I'm in this rate, to your point. I don't want to enter a higher rate environment. So therefore, what am I going to do? I'm either going to wait it out. I'm going to revamp my existing home. Or I'm going to kind of do it, but do it almost in a unhappy way. All three of which makes it so that inventory isn't what it should be. So you had a spike in interest rates, which normally in and of itself would have increased inventory, but in this case, it actually decreased inventory or kept inventory at very low levels. And so therefore, value stayed high and we're still kind of in the spot. It's a very interesting spot to be in right now, actually, in the real estate market.
Yeah, and how do we fix the inventory problem? Well, we'd have a crushingly bad recession. That right. would be one thing that would
right.
help inventory with a lot of people losing their jobs,
right.
being forced to sell their home.
Right.
Let's hope that doesn't happen. And the other thing is, you know, eventually, and this is why home builders are continuing to build
yes.
despite the fact we have elevated rates.
Right.
And so they have to make a profit too. So what does that do? Well, the costs go up and it's an inflationary item that yep. will likely be fairly persistent.
Yeah, because they can't outbuild the demand. That's the problem with it is people go, let's build more homes. Well, first of all, it takes in a very fast pace start to finish, you can build a home in 4 months. Typically, you're looking at more like 6 to 8. So you can't build them fast enough. It doesn't work like that because you don't have enough hands on deck. You don't have enough materials. You don't have enough land to just start tomorrow. I think that's what people lose sight of is to get a subdivision ready to go. That's a year long process. By the time you get the raw land and then get it through all of the planning commissions and get all your approvals and get all your infrastructure done and get the roads put in and get the water put in and get, it's called improving a lot. Well, to get it to improved where it's ready to build, that's at least a year, if not longer.
It's at least. I mean, I have one that's going up by my house. It's probably been over a year and they don't have anything, any dirt is being moved to put houses on. They've got all the infrastructure, like you said. No.
You got to do all the improvements. It takes a long time.
Yeah. It's going to be a year and a half, 2 years before they even start putting the homes on the lots.
Yes.
And then the building process will take multiple years. So to cure this inventory problem will take 3, 4, 5 years to help build enough homes to start to meet this demand out there.
Right. And this is what's so tricky about housing, right? Is that, okay, so you go, okay, this is the plan. We're going to do this. The demand is where it is. Like everything looks good. We're going to do this, right? What if 3 years from now we have a crushing recession? So all of these people they've bought the raw land. They've done all the improvements. They've got all the infrastructure. The roads are all done in the subdivision. And now there's no demand anymore. And this is why housing is a tricky animal because it doesn't correct nearly as fast as stock markets and commodities markets and things like that, because the lag time that it takes to get to where you need to be, that's your gamble, because over that period of time, you're looking at it banking on the fact that the demand is still going to be there in 2 years as it is today. And that's the risk. And that's the risk when it comes to residential, when it comes to multifamily, when it comes to commercial, when it comes to anything like that, industrial is, it's a long lag time and you're hoping that demand is still there. And so that's why markets can get overbuilt. That's why these things can happen, why excess supply can start to happen. So what happened in 08, 09? Well, when you say, how did that happen? Where did that bubble happen? Well, part of it was because of mortgages. right? Part of it was because of other things. But also part of it was because a lot of the subdivisions were started in 2007. So by the time they got there in 2009, where did all the buyers go? Well, they flooded the market, and it wasn't through greed necessarily. It was through a perception of demand that was going to persist that didn't persist. And so then all of a sudden you've got all these subdivisions and nobody to buy these homes. You got all these strip malls and nobody's there to rent them. You've got all these apartment buildings and nobody's there to rent the apartments. Why? Because they overbuilt, but it was because of the lag time that it takes to get this stuff done.
Yeah, and we're in the middle of that right now. And that's why, you know, we generally don't make a lot of predictions in our market outlook, but real estate seems to be one of the safer predictive sort of items, because in 2024, you know, we are kind of probably looking at more of the status quo of last year. We are going to see constrained inventories, right. You know, barring any sort of recession, 2008 event. And even if we had a 2008 event in this year, it would take multiple months for it to even reverberate through the real estate market, because people have to come to terms with the fact that, oh, this 2008 event's happening.
Right.
And we're not forecasting any 2008 event. And that's, we probably would never forecast a 2008 event, because you don't know. The 2008 happens because of all the unknowns that end up showing themselves to you. And then you Monday morning quarterback and say, oh, we saw this coming all this way. It's not going to happen. Like, you know, you can't get into a situation where you can call these sorts of massive events. That's why they become massive events. So barring that, 2024 looks like, well, maybe you'll see some thawing on the interest rate side. I think we've already seen it. I think we'll probably see that a little bit more. I think that's kind of what you're saying too.
Yeah.
See a little thaw there.
Yeah.
See inventory get a little bit better.
Right.
But I mean, kind of more of the same. You're going to see constrained inventories, elevated prices.
Yep.
And interest rates that are, you know, normal, but not feeling great, because you compare it to what you saw in the past. Just a few
years. There's recency bias, obviously, has a huge impact on it. And, but you're right from the standpoint that the inventory is still going to be under duress, because the newness of the kind of ugly rates, if you will, that's kind of worn off. People are starting to get used to the fact that this is, again, kind of more of a normal period of time, right? And the reprieve for a lot of buyers is, you can look at it now and go, well, at least it's not 7.75 on the 30-year fixed, right? So the pullback on rates is actually, it's solidifying in buyers' minds that this is okay to go buy today, because I'm not likely to have it go from 7.75 to 9, which was the fear that some people had. Now that it's gone 7.75 back into the sixes and low sixes, depending where you're at. Again, the recency bias, people can look at it and go, well, at least it's not 7.75 anymore, so I'm going to go out now and feel better about this. And the calendar is going to help too, because obviously once we get into March and April, that's kind of the hottest time for real estate. And so it'll swing back around, and I anticipate that 2024 is a year that's similar to 2023. Struggle with inventory. I don't think the frothiness is there. That's what I would say is different, is that I don't know that you're going to still have the house comes on the market and 24 hours later you have 10 offers on that home. I think some of that is gone, which is good in a way, but I still think that there's a lot of demand, and especially at the price ranges of that kind of first-time home buyer to second home, that area, depending on where you live and kind of what that means for you from a price range, that inventory is still going to be under a lot of pressure. The higher priced homes, that probably takes a little bit of a step back, not from the standpoint of it slows down necessarily, but maybe it gets kind of more normal, i.e. gasp, it takes a month to sell a house.
Yeah. Which, again, back to more of the old normal of how housing purchases actually happen.
Right. Go back to the normal, or back to the future, right? So when I was selling homes, 2 to 3 months, that was normal. 2 to 3 months to sell a house was normal. That was not, and then it didn't matter the price range. Starter homes, a month or two, sure. Maybe a price reduction, sure. Maybe having to negotiate with the buyer, yeah. I mean, that was normal. So this idea of just put my house on the market and it sells in 24 hours, I mean, that wasn't a thing. And when I was selling houses,
it's pretty funny what people have to go into with the mindset now, versus, you know, what if people are waiting a while, they're like, what's wrong with my house? You're like, nothing's wrong with your house. It's just,
right.
You might have it priced appropriately if people are taking a look at it and be like, I don't know, maybe, you know, and you don't have the feeding frenzy of 20 right. offers in a weekend.
Right. And so then you have overzealous sellers too, that then they put their house on the market and they still think that they're going to get 50 grand over asking price or something like that. And so they tend to overprice their homes in some cases. And okay. The hardest thing for people to understand within the real estate market is that the market doesn't care what happened yet last year. That was last year. So as my father always used to say, I mean, anything is only worth what somebody else is willing to pay for it. It doesn't matter what that thing was worth a year ago. If nobody's willing to pay that for it today, it's not worth that anymore. It's worth what it's worth today. And so, yeah, I think sellers can get a little bit overzealous too and just think that they're going to get this huge profit on their house, and maybe, maybe not. And that is the one thing that is a little different versus maybe 18 months ago.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I think from a financial planning perspective, you know, if you're looking at upgrading your home, you know, and you're looking at the current rates, you shouldn't fall prey to what some realtors have done from what I've heard is, oh, you'll end up being able to refinance out of that. It's fine. Don't worry about the super elevated, you know, rate and the dollar amount you're paying every single month. You'll be able to get out of that in a couple of years. And it's like, well, if you're planning for it, you've got to be able to afford it now.
Yeah.
And say, if exactly. I had to make this payment for the next 30 years, yep. could I do that in my financial situation? If the answer is yes, then you're good. If the answer is no, and you're overbuying right now, you can't do that. You just can't assume that rates are going to come back down, because if we're stuck in this range-bound old normal situation, it could be a 20-year period of rates in the 5-7 range where you don't get that automatic ability to refinance into a lower rate. You'll probably get that at some point, but yeah. you can't bank on that.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that's a dangerous path to go down. And you know, the idea of being house poor is a very real thing. I think people misconstrue that because they think to themselves, okay, if I buy too big of a house or too much of a payment, then I'll end up having to have my house foreclosed on. I'll default on my mortgage. It's very, very rarely does that happen. You'll always make your house payment. Not always, but I mean, in most cases, that's what happens. What happens is you suffer on the other end of your budget, i.e. all of the slack gets taken out of your budget. And so that float that you had to be able to afford that car repair that came up, or the report that, you know, afford that expensive month, or that, you know, the month where we're buying gifts, whatever it might be, that's what gets sopped up out of your budget. And that's what makes people feel house poor, because all of a sudden they go, where did all my kind of fluidity go within my budget? Well, it went into that mortgage payment that's $500 more than you can afford.
Well, and the investments suffer as well. And
yeah,
you don't build
for sure.
wealth that way.
Right.
So
right.
You know, you can't, it's very difficult to build wealth through your own primary residence.
Right.
So, because you're always going to live someplace, and that's always going to be an expense in your life. So you're paying that down over the course of many, many years. And if you can't invest into other places, you're just not going to build the wealth that you need to build. You know, to save that 15-20%, you know, as a general rule, you know, if you can't save that and you can only save 7%, well, that's a big problem. You're going to have to get some big raises over time and rely on yourself to get higher and higher in your career, or you're going to have to be forced to downsize at some point.
Yeah, and it probably works out, right? Because that's typically how it goes, but it's going to take a while, and then there's no guarantee of that, and It's just a bad decision. It's going to be a painful ride to get to that point. So have patience. I think that's the mindset that you need to have, is just have some patience right now. It feels like we have a little bit better stability within the interest rate markets. I know it's not as good as when it was 3%, but it feels like at least we have some stability. So I don't know that people need to be rushing to do a lot of things at this point. I think just patience is the key when it comes to finding the right house that makes sense for you. Because if you make the bad decision, it's just so painful to unwind that decision. It's expensive.
It's a huge decision. It's a massive decision. And also, I agree with you on the patience. And like you've always said, houses sell at all times during the year. So there's nothing special about going and joining that spring buyer's market where everyone gets that spring fever. It's totally okay.
And in a way, you're better off in a lot of cases, because the house that you buy in December, you might be able to get a little bit better price on it than buying that same house in April. So, you know, be aware that, you know, if you're in the market, be in the market, you know, and keep your eyes open. Just because there's a lot of snow on the ground doesn't mean that people aren't selling their homes. So
that's great. Well, thanks for joining us today on Give Me Some Truth. You can check out Nake's article as part of our investment guide. It'll also be a blog post on our website as well. Any feedback that you'd like to provide or questions you want to answer, we'd be happy to get into that conversation with you. And we'll join you next time in another episode of Give Me Some Truth.
Walker Condon Financial Advisors is a registered investment advisor with the SEC. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training. The opinions expressed by the participants of this podcast are their own and do not reflect the opinions of Walker Condon Financial Advisors. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Viewers are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.
You gotta leave your money behind you. Raise your hand to the sky. Ask the masses for silence.